Joseph has given his brothers a pretty tough time when they've come into Egypt. Initially, on their first visit, he accused them of being spies, intent on finding the weaknesses in the land of Egypt so that they could come against it with the armies of whichever country they were coming from to spy it. Of course, Joseph knew they weren't spies. He knew exactly who they were. He recognized them immediately and questioned them with regard to their family. But they didn't know him. And Joseph was in league with God to try and bring about a change in the hearts of his brothers. Brothers whose lives were marked by selfishness and cruelty. Certainly, that's their attitude towards Joseph, or it had been at least 20 or more years earlier. They had sold him into slavery, having initially planned on murdering him, intent to get rid of this young boy out of their lives, this boy who was their father's favourite and who bore news back to their father of their wayward lifestyles. They wanted to be rid of him so that they could live on at peace. But before that, they'd shown themselves to be cruel men, taking the lives of their enemies without any compassion at all, and ransacking whole communities for their own profit. There certainly needed to be a change in these men if they were to be the patriarchs of a nation devoted to God. And Joseph then, in league with God, sets about testing his brothers and bringing to their attention the reality of their hearts. And we see that in their own response to Joseph's accusations, they see the hand of God at work. That God is revealing their wickedness. He's bringing it to light. And now in this episode, in the book of Genesis, his brothers, having returned a second time, bringing with them their youngest brother, because Joseph will not give them audience and will not give them grain and will not release a brother that he's kept as security unless the youngest is brought back to Egypt. This time they come to him and they are overwhelmed with his generosity. He takes them into his home. He feeds them and parties with them and releases their brother to them and sets them on their way home as though all is well. But still, he needs to be sure that their hearts have changed. What kind of men are they now? Are they still obsessed with themselves, with their own peace, with their own prosperity, with their own freedom? Or have they changed? And so he has instructed his servant to place a special cup in the sack belonging to the youngest brother. And in this way, he intends to trap them and to see if the older brother's attitudes have changed. And you know the story, how they came back to Egypt intent on saving their youngest brother from servitude to this prime minister of Egypt. There certainly has been a change. In Joseph's life he had experienced cruelty. But Benjamin experiences rescue. Joseph's brothers had sold him into slavery, but now they're willing to sell themselves into slavery in order to secure the release of their youngest brother, their father's favorite. And that's the background then to the 45th chapter of this book of Genesis. This is where the story has brought us so far. And Joseph, then, we're told at the beginning of chapter 45, couldn't control himself no longer. And he tells all of the Egyptian servants to go out of the place where he is, so that he's left alone with his brothers. Up until this point, he has spoken to them through an interpreter. They don't have the slightest inkling as to the true identity of this man who has been at various times so generous towards them and at other times so cruel in his accusations. Who is he? Well, now they hear it from his own lips. I am Joseph. His brothers could not answer him, and we're not surprised. What a revelation that must have been to them. I am Joseph, he tells them for the first time speaking in Hebrew. I am Joseph. The voice is heard for the first time in 2 decades. The voice of one who was sold into slavery, whom they never imagined that they would ever meet again, and certainly not in such an exalted position as he is now. I am Joseph. Come near to me. I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. You need some proof? I know the story. I know you sold me. And now don't be distressed. Don't be angry with yourselves because you sold me here. What an amazing way for Joseph to speak to these brothers who separated him from his father all those years before, who ensured that he went through 13 years of imprisonment and slavery. What a way to speak to these brothers who had been so cruel to him. How could Joseph speak to them in this way? How could he be so calm and collected? How could he not retaliate now that he has them in his power? Well, this is the first thing that I want you to note from this chapter in Joseph's story. The secret to real contentment. How could Joseph have endured these years? 22 years, probably, at this point, given that there's 5 more years of famine to go. How could he have endured those years, as we've observed, content in Potiphar's house, content in prison, and now content in his brother's presence without retaliation? How? Well, he makes it very clear how he could be content. He repeats the reason over and over and over again in this passage. Verse 5. God sent me before you to preserve life. Verse 7. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. Verse 8, so it was not you who sent me here, but God. Verse 9, hurry and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. How could Joseph be content in the varied circumstances that he has been through over these years? He is content in the knowledge that God is in control. God is in control. The secret to real contentment is knowing that God is in charge of our circumstances. These cruel brothers were not in control of Joseph's circumstances. When Jacob sent him on that fateful day to go and see how his brothers were faring and how the flocks were doing, God was in control. When the brothers saw him on the horizon and began to plot together his murder, God was in control. When they threw him into that pit and then determined to sell him into slavery, God was in control. As he was put in chains and dragged down to Egypt, enslaved there, God was in control. As he became elevated in Potiphar's house, God was in control. When Potiphar's wife began to seduce him, God was in control. When she raised false accusations against him and he was imprisoned, God was in control. When he was incarcerated there year after year, telling dreams to other prisoners, interpreting them for them, hopeful of release and finding himself still forgotten, God was in control. When finally he has an audience with Pharaoh and has an opportunity to secure his release from prison, God was in control and elevated him to the highest ruler under Pharaoh in all the land of Egypt. God was in control. And Joseph knows that God was in control. And so he has been content. He hasn't grumbled. He hasn't complained. He hasn't become exasperated in his circumstances. God is in control. This is what the Apostle Paul tells us, doesn't he, in his letter to the church in Philippi. I have learned in all things to be content. In riches, in poverty. Free or in prison, I have learned to be content. Why? Because he knew that God was in control. I don't know the circumstances of your life today, but whatever they are, God is in control. Maybe you're experiencing a period of blessing and peace and happiness in your heart. Give thanks to God. He is in control. Perhaps you're going through a time of testing and trial, of hardship and heartache. Well, God is still in control. Even then, even there. And you can rest upon the God who is in control. It is no accident It isn't some evil power that has got the upper hand for a time. No, God is in control. And you can rest content in his providence. I'm not saying that it's easy to bear. What I'm saying is, knowing that God is in control can enable you to be content in his choice for you at this time. There is the secret of real contentment displayed in the life of Joseph. The second thing that I'd like you to learn from this passage is the proof of true reconciliation. Joseph doesn't just put on a show of friendship with these brothers who have treated him so badly. He is truly reconciled to them. He explains to them why this has happened to him. God has been in control in order to preserve life, to preserve the lives of all those affected by the famine, but more particularly to preserve the lives of his family. God has used their evil hearts to bring about his purposes for his glory and for their good. And because Joseph is able to recognize God's hand in all of that and to have been content in all of that, it enables him to be truly reconciled to his brother, to all of his brothers. Yes, he falls upon his brother Benjamin's neck, who has had no part in his circumstances at all, and weeps together with him in joy of their reconciliation and reunion. But he does the same for all his brothers. He kisses them and weeps upon them and talks with them, these brothers who had plotted his death, who'd sold him into slavery, whose lives have been full of selfish cruelty. He embraces them and loves them. And as he sends them back to bring his father to him in Egypt so that he can care for him and provide for him, he gives his brothers a gift. Each one of them, he gives a gift. And what does he give to them? He gives to them a change of clothing. Each and all of them received a change of clothes. There's a kind of a irony here. Because you see, it was an item of clothing that had so worked up the jealousy of his brothers that they were willing to plot his demise. But notice too that not only does he give them a change of clothing to each one, but he also gives a gift to Benjamin. 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothing. It was favoritism that had led to Joseph's demise. And Joseph shows favoritism to the youngest brother here, proving in all of this that true reconciliation is taking place between himself and his brothers, and between his brothers and himself. Jealousy has evaporated, and hatred is no more. The brothers welcome these gifts, and there's no indication, no sign at all that the hatred that they had shown towards Joseph because of the favoritism that their father had in him, no indication at all that there is any of that lasting in their hearts. Love covers a multitude of sins. And the love of Joseph for his brothers draws out from them a love for him. And there is then this true reconciliation taking place in the hearts of both of them. They get over the sins of the past. And even a repetition of similar circumstances no longer brings out the sin that once was there. That's what happens when there's real reconciliation. When there is true forgiveness. Past sins are forgotten completely and no longer erupt when similarly provoked. Now there's a third and final thing that I want to draw out from this passage. I've already commented a number of times on the way that these brothers have behaved in the past, these 10 older brothers of Joseph. You know, they don't exactly have a great reputation. And it shows. It shows even here in this passage. So, we're told, verse 21, the sons of Israel did so. They head back to Canaan with the wagons and their donkeys and these gifts and so forth. And they end up back in Canaan with Jacob, having been instructed by Joseph, interestingly enough, not to quarrel on the way. But look at what happens when they get back to Canaan. So they went up out of Egypt, came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob, and they told him, Joseph is alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. They had a reputation for being liars and cheats. And their father can't believe them. Now, what's going to remedy this? What's going to remedy this bad reputation that they have, that even their own father cannot believe their words, cannot trust them? Here they are, they're back. Simeon's with them. He's been released from prison in Egypt. Benjamin is safely home. The word of Judah has held firm. He gave his own life as security for his youngest brother. And here they are, a happy family once again. But Jacob just cannot believe this lying bunch of brothers. Now note then the remedy for this bad reputation that the brothers have. They told him all the words of Joseph which he had said to them. And when Jacob saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. How is their bad reputation remedied? It is with the proof of an honest account. They tell him what Joseph said, and they open up to him the gifts that Joseph has sent, which are the proof then of the testimony that they give. These brothers bring with them the favor of an influential friend. The favour of a brother with whom they've been reconciled. And this helps to heal the reputation that they have towards their father. a reputation for lying and deceit and for selfishness. It speaks to us of one who was to come to heal the reputation that all sinners have before a holy God. Over and over again, we've seen how Joseph has prefigured Jesus Christ. And here is yet another hint of that. Jacob wouldn't believe the words of these brothers until he saw the proof in the gift and the testimony sent by Joseph. And how are we to overcome the bad reputation that we have with God? A reputation that is proven by the sinfulness of our hearts. Well, the remedy is to be found in the favour of an influential friend, of Jesus Christ, who, like Joseph, was sent by God to save a remnant for the glory of God, who gave up his freedom and his glory and his power and humbled himself and became obedient as a servant, even to the point of death, so that he could redeem and reconcile sinners to God. And this same Saviour then sits at God's right hand and he intercedes for us with God. There he sits, as we sang this morning, with five wounds that speak so eloquently of his sacrifice. Five wounds in this slaughtered Lamb of God that speak of atonement for sin, that speak of wrath absorbed in the place of others. And so our sin is covered by the life and work and words of this influential friend who died for us and lives to intercede for us. The story of Joseph and his interaction with his brothers is such a wonderful demonstration of the love of God for sinners. And over again we find in the life of Joseph these pictures of the way that Jesus Christ has lived for us and died for us and reigns for us in heaven. And what an encouragement that must give us then to live for him, to make sacrifice for him, to devote our lives to his service. So undeserved. These 10 brothers deserved the full wrath of Joseph and the full power that he had to bring justice upon them. But he loves them and he forgives them. And so God does for us because of Jesus.